All right, take your Bibles and find 1 Corinthians chapter 12. And what I want to do before we look at how rulers, this is a gift, rulers are administrators, how administrators or rulers misuse their gift of administrating, I want to do a quick review from chapter 12 of 1 Corinthians about why we have, what is the purpose of spiritual gifts. Romans 12, whenever you think about spiritual gifts, and we're not talking about the gifts that we dealt with from the charismatic movement. We've dealt with those. We're talking about manifestation gifts, gifts that God has given to us from Romans 12. And those gifts we're looking at one by one. We have developed them over the last several months, all of them. Tonight we're going to we've already developed all their characteristics. Now we're looking at how an administrator would misuse his gift. Now, have you ever been to church and you felt like the preacher was just buttonholing you? Have you ever been to church and you said, "Wow, I just wish he'd be quiet." I know what it's like to be like that. And tonight I unveil to you, and most of you know that my gift is the gift of a prophet. But underneath that, subordinate to that gift, is administration. And so I'm preaching to myself tonight, and I want you to know I've beat up myself today, reminding myself of all my weaknesses. Because you're going to see them. Some of you will be able to see them very clearly. And some of you who are administrators, we have several here, you will feel pain tonight because of our weaknesses. And it'll be a good, healthy reminder. But before we do that, I've only once, since I preached from 1 Corinthians 12, I've only once did a brief overview. So I want to take time to do that tonight as we think about why does God gift men and women? Why does He gift men and women in the local assembly, the local church? What is the purpose of all that? Do people just get saved and baptized and they just sit in the church and they never serve? What is the purpose of that? If you come and you just take in and take in and take in and you never give out, then you will become a sponge. And every now and then, God wants us to realize that we are part of a body that functions only when everyone exercises their gifts properly. And so when we look at 1 Corinthians 12, we can see very quickly. Let's just look at a few verses. We're not even going to read the chapter. I have already spent time in this chapter going through verse by verse. But let me just point out a few things, and you can make a mental note of them. Why does He gift men? Number one, He does so to equip the members of a local church who is a part of the body of Christ. The church is illustrated as a bride, as a building, and as a body in the New Testament. We have all three of those snapshots, we could call them, or illustrations. But we have them all. And in 1 Corinthians, it's about us understanding from the human anatomy who we are. Look at verse 14. For the body is not one, but many. Many members of the body. Everyone is vitally important. If you are a member of this church, you are very important. You say, "Well, I'm young and I haven't been saved very long." You're still very important. "Well, you know, I'm kind of old and tired and I just think that I'm unimportant." No. You're very important. Everyone is important because you're part of the body, and He equips the body to be fitly joined together. So what's the purpose? We're equipped members that need to come together and labor and work together. Number two, if you'll look with me in verse 18, we're to enjoy working together. After all, look what God has done for us. But now hath God set the members, every one of them, in the body as it pleased him. And the word pleased is the Greek word for the word purpose or for the word will. So, watch this. When we talk to people about membership into our church, we're not looking for noses and nickels. We're not looking for numbers. That does not drive us at all. What are we looking for? We are looking for the will of God for their life. We want it to be God's will for them to be a part of our church. If you joined our church, since I have been pastor and we talk personally about that, I guarantee you we've talked about it being the will of God. Because it's so vitally important that people know that they are in the will of God, because then when struggles come, we don't jump. We say, no, wait a minute, God called us. And so now He willed, it's His good pleasure, He is pleased with me being here. Because of that, I'm going to enjoy working together. I'm part of the body, fitly joined together, and I have the privilege of enjoying that God has placed me here according to His good pleasure. It pleased Him. And so man's will is out of it. God's will, it's all about it. Let me show you another one. Look down, drop down to verse 24. It's a great word in this verse. You'll love this. Some of you will remember this when I preached from this verse. For our comely parts, comely has to do with handsome. Some of us are very pleasant to look at, and some of us are ugly. I'm in the ugly group, all right? We're comely people. So notice what the verse says. For our comely parts have no need. Boy, there's some that's very well gifted. They got it all together. I mean, you ever seen a person? I mean, their hair's always in place. I mean, a fly wouldn't light on them. You know, everything is perfect. And then there are some of us who doesn't have it together that much. And that's okay. We don't have to. Because what he's saying here is whether you're comely or uncomely, you're still important. That's what he's saying here. Matter of fact, look at what it says. But God hath tempered. There's our key word. The word tempered is the word, the Greek word blended. Now think with me just for a moment. You got a Kentucky-born hillbilly for a pastor who was taken at the age of 5 to Macon, Georgia, and reared there for 20 years in the Deep South, who got saved and called to preach, left Georgia and went to Tennessee for his education, pastored in Alabama, West Virginia, Ohio, and now in Indianapolis. You were brought to this church, and you were blended into this body of believers by the will of God. That is important. We are here by divine appointment. God brought us here. Notice what verse 24 says. But God hath tempered the body together, having given more abundant honor to that part which lacked. In other words, don't think just because you might be lacking and you may not have it all together and you might not be the most comely member that you're unimportant. God even gives you more grace. Isn't that good? I like that. Because we need it. Us uncomely people need it. We're thankful for it. He has blended us together. You go down the road to the blended church. Don't think they've got a handle on that word. They don't even know what that word means. We know what that word means according to the scriptures. And because of that, out of all walks of life, we've got people from the north, people from the south, people from the east, people from the west, people from foreign countries, people of different color, cultures. We have a biblical New Testament church right here. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. I love it. And God adds to us, and He adds to us, and He adds to us, and sometimes He takes away from us, and then He adds to us, and He adds to us. And we got to realize this is God's work. And so God is busy multitasking in people's lives and hearts as we come together. So He equips us so that we might enjoy being established. That's the idea here, being established together. But we're also to evade something. Look at verse 25. That there should be no schism in the body. And the word schism means division. So we're to evade division in the body. We're to work hard at it. Now, we're human and human beings, and we're of the same family. What family does not have a spat every now and then? We're of the same family. We're of the family of God. We can knock heads, bump heads. We can misinterpret each other. We're human. Are you ready for that? Nothing about us is divine except we have the Holy Spirit inside. Other than that, we're rotten dirt balls that we can't trust. Can't trust our flesh. There's no good thing that dwelleth within our flesh. The Bible tells us that. So we have to realize here we are blended all together from all corners of the world and cultures for God to use. And I want to tell you something. Please listen. When we walk in the Spirit and when we realize that we can yield to Him and He can fill us and use us and equip us, then all of a sudden, hurt feelings aren't worn on our sleeves so easily. And we're able to get over hurt. We're able to, are you ready for this? Die to self. Brother so-and-so said such and such, such. May have, may not have, died to it. I mean, isn't that the Christian life? Are we not crucified with Christ? Galatians 2:20. We are. And so here we have a wonderful idea that there be no schism. But notice the rest of the verse. What are we supposed to be? That's what we're not supposed to be doing. Look at what we're supposed to be doing. But that the members should have the same care one for another. We should be edifying one another. Evading the division and edifying one another. Look at verse 26. We're to be encourage one another. Whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. And one member be honored, all the members rejoice with it. Isn't that great? So when one of us hurts, we all should hurt. When one of us are blessed, we all should rejoice. We shouldn't be jealous of the blessing, should we? No. We should all rejoice and be glad for them. What are we doing when we hurt and cry with them and when we laugh and enjoy them? What's happening? I tell you what's happening. We're encouraging one another. It's a great encouragement. And then look at verse 27. This is a great verse. Now ye are the body of Christ and members in particular. In other words, he's saying, now you're the body, you're members. You've got work to do. Can't be about yourself. It's about others. You have work to do. And to do that, then endure one another. That's the idea here. We endure one another so that we can labor together. See, knowing my gift and me knowing your gift will help us in difficult days because we have them. Knowing someone else's gift, you knowing your wife's gift, and your wife knowing your gift will help your relationship. This series of messages is not just about church growth, but it's about understanding one another. It's about relationships. It's about understanding each other so that we can endure one another, forgive one another, forbear with one another. The Greek word forbear means to put up with one another. We have to do that because we're human. We're in the same family. So we get accustomed and used to one another. And we get very free to offer our opinions and offer our thoughts. Before you know it, something is said and we have to say, hey, I'm sorry, or we have to die to it. It's important for us to understand why He gifts us. So this goes to our relationship at home, our relationship on the job. Be good to figure out your boss and you will not be as quick to get upset at him or vice versa when you understand him. So this is all about how God gifts people through their personality and through their calling, and He's able to help you. Well, Nehemiah is a beautiful snapshot of an administrator, a ruler. And we've already seen how he certainly could see the final results of the wall and how he got a burden when he went to Jerusalem and saw the rubble. And there he was, walking amongst the rubble and got such a burden for it. He went back as the king's cupbearer. And God began to work. And an administrator rose up out of the ashes of captivity for such a time as it was to build the walls and set the gates, the 10 gates, back on their hinges. He had a keen ability to break down major goals to smaller achievable tasks. That's what administrators do. They can see the big picture and then they can break it down and make it all happen. Nehemiah knew what resources were available. He was the king's cupbearer. And he knew that he had the advantage of having the heart of the king. Very trusted man. The king ended up not only giving him permission, but signing off on letters and getting the cedars of Lebanon down to the city and building the gates. It's amazing when you read the book of Nehemiah. It is the book of the Bible that as a young pastor challenged and changed my leadership, because I saw in Nehemiah something as I read through it and really studied it, and it helped me. And some of these very principles I'm sharing with you even tonight. Nehemiah had a keen ability to see other people's abilities and then capture them to get it done. When he needed something for the smith to do, he went to a smith, an ironsmith, whatever. If he needed a carpenter, he went to the carpenter. And then he was an expert at this. And this was certainly hard for me to learn, but he was willing to endure criticism and even threats from Sanballat and Tobiah. You remember those two characters, I'm sure. They were on the inside working to hurt and hinder the work. And he had the ability to die to that, to not be drawn off into the fight, but to stay focused so he could move forward and get the job done. This wall and those gates were hung in 52 days. He prayed longer. He prayed over 90 days to do 52-day work. Amazing, isn't it? And we hardly ever pray, and we set out on a life venture. How sad that is. Nehemiah taught me so much. He also taught me that how to entrust leadership to those who are not only capable, but to also expect loyalty. So whether you were on the wall with the trial and a sword in your hand, or whether you were in the smith shop pounding out a hinge, or whether you were sawing lumber to make a gate, everyone was in their place working. And loyalty to those, loyalty to him as the director, administrator, was very important. And he had the ability to inspire the workers. There was something when Nehemiah came on campus, the campus lit up. He was an inspiration to be around. Wasn't easily distracted. Took care of situations behind the scenes privately, and moved forward. He had the ability to encourage workers. He had a cheerfulness about him, even in the midst of not knowing how it was going to turn out. He had his blood pressure under control without medicine. He knew how to praise. He knew how to challenge. He knew how to put his approval on things. And he was overjoyed when the project was over. He gave God the credit and the glory for what God did through not him, but through everybody involved. And all the challenges that came along finally went away. They endured, and eventually the captivity was over. They went back, and the city was greatly enjoyed by many. He was a man of unrelenting standards. There were certain standards that he lived by that he refused to give up. He was tough in his preaching. Didn't let anything slip. And it helped. It helped people understand him. No wonder Solomon writes, "The hand of the diligent shall bear rule." The faithfulness of Nehemiah was one of the reasons why God called him to the task that was before them. And God used him in a great way. However, may I say, an administrator is born with blind spots. Everybody is. It's easy to put on rose-colored glasses. It's easy to hope things would get better and look over some things because you have a task to do. You're reaching for a goal. And so you want to accomplish it. You don't want anything to get in your way. And so you stay at it, and you stay at it, and you stay at it. It's like the story that I heard. Perhaps you've heard it. Three guys went out golfing. On the third hole, one had a heart attack and died. The other two didn't come home till way after dark. And one of their wives was worried and said, "Honey, where have you been?" Said, "Well, George had a heart attack on hole number three." And she said, "Oh, I'm so sorry." He said, "What took so long?" He said, "After that, it was hit the ball and drag George. Hit the ball and drag George." What was he going to do? He was going to finish the game. He was determined. So what are some of the weaknesses? You have your paper. Just turn it over. Last week, you got one study sheet. Just flip it over. How many of you need a study sheet? Just a few of you. Thank you for bringing your sheets back. Can the ushers help? Brother Pycraft, you're back there just standing. Just walked in. No, he's been here. I'm sorry. See, that's a rumor. He's been here. He's had duty somewhere, I'm sure. They're on the table, aren't they, baby? Are they on the table? In the foyer on the table. Hey, Brother Chairman's got them. Hold your hands up if you need the study sheet. All right, very good. And keep your hands up until you get the hand out, and then you can start filling in the blank. I'm gonna go quickly now, okay? I'm not going to keep you long. We've only got an hour and 20 minutes left here, so I want to be sure we get it taken care of. Number one, an administrator sometimes views people as human resources rather than human beings. That's a weakness that an administrator will have. Administrators need to know that people and materials are available to them in order to accomplish the task. Why? Because he sees the task and how it needs to be handled. It is easy for them, therefore, to overlook individual needs of the workers and simply view them as resources to get the job done. So an administrator has to be extremely cautious that he does not overtax or looks at someone through the rose-colored glasses of a human resource rather than human beings that get tired, they get weary, and all of that. They can't just be pushed and pushed and pushed and pushed. Number two, an administrator sometimes will find himself using people to accomplish personal ambitions. You see, when an administrator has people around him, has the materials around him, has the ability and things at his disposal, it's easy to divert those resources to accomplish personal goals that he has for himself. So he has to reel himself in and say, "Hey, this project's not about me. This project is about the overall goal." So using people to accomplish personal admonitions. Number three, sometimes he will show favoritism to those who appear to be more loyal, especially favoritism to those that has their heart in line with His. And He senses that loyalty, and so there's favoritism. And the single most important quality in an administrator's thought and life and heart is that he needs loyal people he can depend upon to get the job done. He's not going to lord over them. He's going to let the smith do his job, let the carpenter do his job, let the trial bricklayer do his job, let the swordsman do his job. He's going to let them function the way that they should. He's not lording over them. Therefore, he has to be careful, because those who seem to be in line with him, if he's not careful, then favoritism, or he will give passes, free passes, to those that are loyal. So he has to be consistent. He has to say, okay, now there's principles that we must lead by, and those principles cannot be violated. And if you think I'm going to give you a free pass and I don't, then your loyalty and our friendship is challenged. And so he has to be sure that he is fair and balanced and equal as best he can be across the board. No favoritism. At the same time, administrators must be sure that he sends a shot across the bow that he is impartial about this, because his natural tendency would be to favor those that seem to be more loyal. Number four, taking charge of projects which are not their direct responsibility. They pick up monkeys that do not belong to them. There are certain monkeys that the administrator feeds, and he does not need to be feeding someone else's monkeys. He needs to be taking care of his business. Are you with me tonight? Does that make sense? How many times have we made it our business to put our nose where it should not be and start feeding somebody else's monkey when they have a caretaker? And we shouldn't be jumping over, taking a responsibility that is not ours. Ordinarily, an administrator will stay on the sideline until he is engaged for the job. Now, once he is engaged, he is a take-charge person. He's going to be taking charge of the project. That's the reason, by the way, why they feel that they should be supported by those that are working under him. They need to know their full support is in tow with them. And it's working. At the same time, it is difficult for administrators to stand by and watch mismanagement and inefficiency. It drives them nuts. They do not like redos. They like to do it right the first time. Now, some of you wives are rolling your eyes over at your husband already. I see you doing that. I love it when I see that. See, an administrator is a perfectionist. Most of them are. Not all of them, but most of them are. And so they got a certain way, a certain time, a certain method in which everything is done. And so they are making sure that they try to stay in the realm of their leadership that they're supposed to, and they're not taking someone else's responsibility. That leads to another real flaw in the character of an administrator. And that is, some of you men, your rib cages are hurting already tonight. That is, you delegate too much of the work to the same people. You say, Pastor, would you shut up? No, I won't, because we need it. We delegate too much work to the same people. The main talent of a good administrator is knowing how and who to delegate responsibilities to others is all about. This leaves administrators free to focus on the overall project. Boy, I can trust her, I can trust him, she's in, he's in, and I'm on to the bigger picture. I'm going to look over and pull the elevator, pull the yoke back, get the elevator in up position, and get above and look at the whole project. I want to be sure everything is going all right. And so we hand the football off. And sometimes we delegate too much of the work to the same person. The same running back cannot run every play. You will wear him out. And the thing of it is, they're such a key player, you can't do that. And so you have to back off. And you have to realize we're going to have to take care of this in another way. We're going to have to do some brainstorming. Get yourself into what I call a think tank. And think it through. Rethink it. Let's make this work. Is there another vantage point? Is there another way in which we can make this work? I want to be free to oversee the whole operation. But we have a glitch over here. We got somebody with weak knees. They're worn out. They worked hard. I remember many years ago in our former ministry, we worked hard through a major, major renovation program. We were trying to get through ready for our spring revival, and we worked every night for weeks that we weren't at church, and every Saturday, just like we've done here on many occasions, trying to reach deadlines and trying to get it all taken care of. And I want to tell you something. By the time the end of the week came and we walked out of the church on Saturday night late and everything was in place and we was ready for revival the next day, we had several people saved on Sunday morning. Evangelist did a great job. And about Tuesday night, he took a liberty that he should not have taken. And he says, "Hey, you people are too tired out there. Y'all need to wake up. Listen to me." I want to tell you something. No evangelist has the privilege to be the pastor. Okay, now I want you to understand me. Please listen to me. I'm responsible for those sheep. The evangelist had no idea. We were tired. He had no clue what was going on behind the scenes. Good man. After the service, after he greeted everybody, after he sold his CDs, he got ready to go out the door, go home to his trailer. I put my arm around his shoulder. I said, "Let's go back to my study. I want to talk to you for a minute." I took him to my study in a very gracious way. I said, "I love you. I appreciate you. God is blessing the meeting. But you're not the pastor here. I'm the pastor. And you took a privilege tonight that you should not have taken. And we are tired. We've worked hard to get ready for you in this meeting. Major renovation program." I'm telling you, an ashen look come on his face and he said, "Please forgive me." He dropped to his knees and asked God to forgive him. We went on that week and we had a great meeting. People were saved and baptized. It was fantastic. Since that time, he's preached for me again. And will preach in the future. Because he learned a lesson that night. That the pastor was the administrator. And no one takes privilege with the people of God when it's not his responsibility to do so. That's why I love people so much. That's why I love the sheep of our church. And that's why I want to be a good under-shepherd. It's important. And you and I have a wonderful relationship, and I'm thankful for it. And it grows and gets closer day by day, and I'm thankful for that. But let me give you some bullet points. This is one of the weakest points that I have in my little sub-gift, my subordinate gift of administration. If we are not careful, here's some bullet points. They're not on the screen, but they're for you. You're not going to like them all, but I'm going to give them to you anyway because they're bullets. I'm telling you, they'll sting you. If you do not take a look at how you can revamp things, and if you work the same people too much, you can take them away from their family. And you wouldn't want to do that. You can wreck the relationship of a husband and wife. You can build resentment in the lives of their other family members, their children. Why doesn't Daddy come home before we go to bed? You can build resentment in the heart of your most loyal worker who's on your team, in line with your heart. You can make the faithful feel like they're doing all the work. They're doing the best they can, and they're tired. It's tough on them. So we have to drop back and punt. Can't run the running back all the time. An administrator sometimes can be perceived as a slave driver. And he doesn't want that. Number six, quickly, as you're writing these eight things down, overlooking serious character faults in valued workers. Where you will hold someone accountable for a character flaw, you'll give the loyal guy a pass. And that happens because what are you trying to do? You're trying to accomplish your goal, so it's easy to rely on that same person or to give that person a pass while other people don't get the pass. Then you look inconsistent. Creates another problem. If I've said this many, many times. If we've got one problem, let's be sure we handle it right. We don't want to mishandle it and have two problems. I mean, we don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. Who wants to complicate things? I don't. I'm a simple person. Let's keep it simple. Keep it basic. And let's take care of our business. And let's don't build a big mountain so when someone falls off, they get hurt. Don't want that. Then number seven, being unresponsive to suggestions and appeals. One time, one of our gracious men in a former ministry said after a meeting, said, "Pastor, I was going to make a suggestion, but you talked on top of me and I couldn't do it." Ugh! He was right. I had to apologize to him. And his suggestion was far better than mine. But I'm a steamroller sometimes. I don't want to be. I have to reel myself in. I don't want to be that way. But a good administrator will take suggestions. Listen to people. Consider an appeal. Not cut them off and be finished with them. Kick them through the goalposts of life and go on. But to treat them right. And then number eight, failing to give proper explanations and worthy praise to workers. They just expect it to be done and all of a sudden you have to stop and explain yourself. Sometimes my wife has to say, "Time out. Explain to me." Because I think that she should think like I think. That doesn't happen, folks. People cannot think alike. We're made different. So we have to explain it. A, B, C, and D. Step one, step two, step three. See, my fault is this. I think you should remember every sermon that I preach and I should only have to preach it one time. That's a fault. And I have to realize that if a good song is worth singing twice and a good poem is worth quoting twice, a good sermon is worth preaching twice. And we have to hear line upon line. Isn't that what the Bible says? Precept upon precept. That's the way we have to have it, for us to process it through our mental mill and get it all in order, and then we can execute. Explanation will allow execution. Don't expect execution if you're not explaining. Now, let me get real nosy with parents. Don't expect your kids to think like you, and you better be glad they don't. They are not adult in little bodies. And so we have to be patient. And with that comes praise. Workers need to be made to feel like I've been a part of the link that has made it all come together. And because it's all come together, now we can all enjoy it. Last year, we got into our new building program. Brother Donnie Hawkins is a tremendous administrator. He knows how to do it. He knows how to delegate. He knows who to talk to. He's a Nehemiah. And because of that, we're all enjoying it. And some of us had part in that. I remember when we came and bought the property and we took the dance ball down and the three bars out of here and prayed the evil spirits out and got rid of all that stuff. And I remember on our knees laying these carpet squares with people laughing and having a good time. And then Donnie coming and correcting me on how I was laying them wrong. He was a good administrator. He needed to correct me. Pastor, they have these arrows. Oh, that's what that's for. He explained it to me. When he explained it, I could execute. I needed his help. You see, we're saved from all walks of life. And God's gifted you. You might not be an administrator. Perhaps you're a giver. Perhaps you're a teacher. Maybe as we learn next time about those who have mercy. See, gifts is not, our gifts are not just about things that we do. It's things that we have that we can give. And that's what's so good about understanding these gifts. We all have one or main one, and we have several subordinate ones. Because of that, God uses us. It's fun to be used by God, isn't it? It's enjoyable. We can see a task come together and a job completed for the honor and glory of God because we were equipped, we enjoyed working together, we encouraged one another, we edified one another, and we were fitly joined together. And tomorrow be another project. Next year be another project. Be another program we can get involved in. Instead of Vacation Bible School, be another program that we can be involved in. Another ministry that we'll start that we can use our gifts and talents and abilities. That's what growing a church is all about. Isn't it fun to do that? I love doing it. It's fantastic. You have a place at Cross Point. God's called you here by the will of God. God will use you for His honor and for His glory as we work together, put up with one another, be patient with one another. We're not perfect. If you're looking for perfection, you're looking at the biggest dirt ball in here. I'm telling you, don't look for perfection. We have to apologize. We have to say, I'm sorry. I have to say, if we had to do that all over again, we'd do it different. I mean, after all, haven't you told your children that? I hope you have. And you and I have the privilege of serving together until Jesus comes. Isn't that great? That's why getting saved and being a part of a Bible-believing church and church membership, that's why all of that is so vitally important. Christ died for the church. And it's important that everybody is a part of a local assembly that they might be used and exercised for the glory of God. Would you stand with me, please?